Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Adaptation Everywhere and features Laura Rosen Weatherford in an interview with Erin Sheena.
My name is Erin Sheena. I would love to welcome Laurel Rosen Weatherford. Thank you so much for joining us today, Laurel, for this Imagine podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
As music therapists, we know that when we think outside the box, we can create really successful music experiences for children with all ability levels. So in this year's Imagine podcast series, we would love to hear from you how you make music accessible to young learners and what kind of adaptations you make or assistance you give, and how this support transforms participation and engagement for your clients. So we've got some questions for you. Ready to hit the ground running?
Let's do it.
All right. First off, just tell us where you work. What's your role?
Sure. So I work from the Monroe County Intermediate School District in Monroe, Michigan. And I am a music therapist here in the school setting, and we provide service within a continuum of settings to children ages 2.5 all the way up to 26.
Wow, that's a big range.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about adaptive music making in kind of that early childhood segment, what comes to your mind? What do you think of?
Well, I think the first thing that I think about is just that music is something that all of our students can participate in at whatever level that they're at. And so I really work hard to create environments where my students are interested and engaged and having opportunities to explore, and whatever exploration they do is okay. And so I think we really create environments that are rich in understanding and learning from each other. And that's really, really important. I also, since this is all about like adaptive inclusivity, like I do not provide a lot of music therapy sessions in the early childhood that don't have same age peers within the bed embedded into the session. That's really important to me and my philosophy as far as providing supports to students.
Yeah, I love that word exploration that you used. And it sounds like you kind of foster an environment where students can explore with their peers too and build those relationships.
Yes, absolutely.
In what way can adaptive music making support access and that sense of belonging? Can you tell us a little more about that and how that builds relationships with peer groups?
Yeah, so I think that we want to, well, not just think, the research would guide us in the fact that we want those universal supports accessible for all of our students all the time. So within my sessions, always I'm using visuals, always I'm having peer support, always we're using behavior strategies. We're trying to have the least amount of adult support as possible and really using each other to learn and watch. When we model something for the students, like for example, before I even turn my students, I should say, like, so they can engage in the music, I may model it first and then I might share it, but then I may also watch my students and see what they're doing, and I might begin to do what they're doing. So I use the ideas my students have that embed within the session. Like I think about recently, like I had a little guy and we were playing rhythm sticks, and it was the song we like to move it from Madagascar. And he was not interested in tapping the sticks, but he got up and he started like bouncing up and down to the music. So I stood up with him and I started kind of bouncing with my rhythm sticks. So I had half the group playing their rhythm sticks. He was kind of bouncing, and then a few of the other students saw him like dancing around and really moving to that beat. Then they started to do it too. And they had so much joy from one another, and they felt such a part of the intervention, even though it changed. It wasn't what I had planned to do. I wanted them to imitate with rhythm sticks, but it's okay that it changed and morphed into something for everyone.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the idea of not just adaptive in the techniques for making music, but also adaptive to their responses, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we're all adapting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, all the time.
Yeah. So kind of in that vein, do you have any tips or tricks about how to adapt instruments or your music lessons or experiences?
Yeah. So I mean, my undergraduate was actually in music education. So I'm always thinking about like what level of music that we would expect early childhood students to be doing. And really in early childhood, it's about exploration. It's about beat awareness. It's about movement up and down and side to side and following some of those pitches. And so I naturally tried to work with that when I'm starting, but then we all have different ways that we may want that. So for example, like I have some students and I have to give credit to one of the occupational therapists here at my work, Whitney Stayer, because we were really struggling to get some of our students to hold onto the instruments. And so I went to her and she and I had a consultation and she suggested that maybe to help with some of the grip, we put some Velcro onto some of the shakers. And so we put the Velcro on and then some of our students were able to hold just a little bit easier. For our students that don't want to hold the handles yet, we might use other instruments, or we might use, I've got all sorts of shakers. So like I've got the tube shakers and I've got the those little like kind of Chiquitas and I've got the actual egg. So whatever they want to do, they can use. It doesn't have to be the same. And just the way that they use it doesn't have to be the same either. So maybe some of us are following a simple rhythmic pattern while others are keeping a beat, and while other students maybe are just playing on a 1-2. 1-2, you know, whatever they need to do with still that goal in mind that we're creating and making music as a group.
Having ways to set students or group members up for success and making sure that they can engage not only in like the way that's meaningful, but sometimes like physically can engage is so important.
Absolutely.
I love that you have those options.
Yeah. And I would love just to even add too, like I do have some students in my groups where they're more passive in their music making and they're not active, and that's okay too. And I think, you know, especially sometimes some of our teachers, they were like, they want to go over and they want to put their hands on the student to get them to start to do it. And, you know, really just even coaching them through that, like, it's okay if our student today is going to observe and watch, that's where they're at, and that we can start to build those skills, but that, you know, being an observer is still being part of that group.
Circling back a little bit to what we were talking about before with adapting the instruments for students to be able to play, how have you integrated assistive technology into your sessions?
So we have two assistive technology consultants that are part of our group, and something that are part of our agency, I should say, and something that they have really done with us is really worked with us to identify the difference between low tech versus high tech. And just even having those visuals available to students so that, you know, maybe you're using a song that has Velcro and their students are pulling it apart. Like I think about like Five Green Speckled Frogs, and I have a song where they like are going to go onto the log, and being able to pull those frogs off is really a low tech opportunity for our students. But then as far as like other technology opportunities, we use core boards here in our school. And a lot of our students have devices that have the core boards onto it, whichever level that they're at. In our music room, we also have a low-tech option, which is our gigantic core board. But we have like very large visuals for our students so that maybe, for example, like if we're doing some start-stop playing, we may have students do go and play, and they may point to the go and the stop that's on the visual, or they may use their device to be able to indicate when it's time to go and stop, or if they want more, or if they want to be finished. So we will use what the students are using. Within that high tech too, we have some students that are utilizing eye gazes. So we've been working to try to utilize those more in our sessions as well. But I will say that that has been a learning process for us, because that has really been a newer piece of equipment that we are having opportunities to use.
So switching gears just a little bit, what kind of non-standard music notation have you found to be a good option for your groups?
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so when I was in graduate school, I actually had a fantastic opportunity to work with Dolores Gauthier at Western Michigan University, and she was a music educator, so I was her graduate assistant, and she really specialized in early childhood, and she used a system, and I cannot remember where it came from. I always call it the Dr. G method, but I know it came from a methodology, but it's utilizing what's called like short and longs through like an additive approach. And so I might use like little circles for our beat. So it's like short, 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 or it's like a tap and they can see the circle. And then for long, which would really feel like a quarter note, long. So then they are able to see it and they can see the duration that it goes. I always work on that additive approach. So because students first learn to add before they learn to subtract. So when we're doing note reading, we're looking to add it. So like if you have 1 + 1, it equals 2. So a quarter and a quarter and a half. Once we understand what I'm going to call like that iconic representation, then we'll start to move to some of the symbolic as well, which would be the traditional note reading that we use. I will give exposure to it in early childhood, especially with my students that are getting ready to go on to kindergarten, although we don't always do that. In some of our groups that are, I might even use like objects of interest. So like food. So maybe we're doing like apple. And then we might see banana. Or I might try to help students if they're working on like categories, like think about what has like one sound with like pig. Or we might have like our pig and our puppy. So that then they can like start to build upon what they're doing. So we use a lot of visuals with that rhythm as well. But I traditionally like to go with that iconic approach first, if I can, just because it goes into everything, right? They learn one strategy and it doesn't have to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And the transfers that they make without really even realizing it,
yes,
as you go on.
Exactly. And something else that Dr. G used to always tell us is that you want students to experience it first. So making it very inactive before you make it more concrete for them to understand. And so, you know, maybe we're going to move to the music by doing like We Are the Dinosaurs and we're marching to the beat. And then we might see how we can march to the beat and follow it along. So, you know, really getting them active in that process before we start to make it a little bit more like with that representation and what it means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds so fun. I want to join your class.
Come anytime, you're welcome. 2 years ago, our district participated in something called Alt Shift, which is done through the Department of Ed here in Michigan. And it is an emerging literacy program. And so part of that is embedding something called a repeated writing instruction. So like, for example, like maybe you have like your topic of the day, and maybe your topic is, we'll just stick with food since we already talked about it. So like, and then the students, so you would say like, Laurel likes, and then you would fill in the blank, pizza. And then Aaron likes hamburgers. And then the students get to like add on. And maybe you have like your visuals that are available with that so they can see how that sentence goes. The other piece that I thought was just really fun. So this like kind of happened. It was very spontaneous, but it turned out so fun. In one of our early childhood groups, we had a student who liked the song It's Raining Tacos. So then we took that line of It's Raining Tacos and then we changed it to the other foods that it could be raining. So it could be raining like ice cream and it could be raining pizza, and they got to then build their sentences with what they thought it would be. And then we took the melody and then we sang about it later. Something else that I will do, a lot of times I do a lot of like the fill in the blanks. So like there's a song called Grandpa's Farm, and it's like down on Grandpa's farm, there lives a great big, and then they would have to fill in the blank for which animals would be there. I don't do as much spontaneous music making or like not as structured. A lot of times my songwriting tends to be something that maybe they have a known about already, or like a fill in the blank opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like it's, again, kind of one of those group activities or getting everybody involved in that process.
Yes.
Which non-traditional music making environments kind of come to your mind from your practice or from experiences that your students have? What does it make you think of?
As far as like non-traditional, a lot of times we're in the school, it's where we are. And I would say that in the last few years, we've not had a whole lot of opportunities to not be in our tradition because we've had so many restrictions put on us. Although Zoom was definitely a non-traditional setting for a lot of my early childhood students, During the pandemic, we ran an early childhood group, myself and Peyton Carricker, who's one of my coworkers. We ran a group every single week for students so they could join in and engage in active music making with the music therapist. So that was, I wouldn't say it's non-traditional. I think it's becoming more traditional than we think, but was something we had not done before. The other thing that I do is a lot of times we want to bring our families in. We want our families to see what our students are doing. And so like the end of last school year, we still had some precautions put in place in our agency, but going outside was one that allowed us a little bit more freedom. And so one of my schools had a courtyard and we decided to have a picnic out in the courtyard. And then we did a music making in the courtyard with our families and our students. So a little bit more non-traditional from like our classroom environment. I would say we don't get as many of those opportunities as what we would like just because of where we're at. We did recently, this just happened 2 weeks ago during Valentine's Day, we were able to bring a group of kindergartners to one of our assisted livings, and we were able to have an intergenerational session with the residents there, and that was a little bit more non-traditional for us, and it had so many benefits for both sides. It was awesome.
Oh, I love to hear that. Yeah. Dr. Petra Kern did a study on that several years ago while I was in school. And it's amazing to see that interaction and again, that exploration, right, between the generations, getting to know each other.
It was so fun. And I have to tell you, like, and my kindergartners had never heard some of the songs, like L is for the way you look at me and like some of the Elvis, and they loved it. It was just fun to see them expand their musical repertoire and to be able to use music in a way that was so meaningful for the seniors that they were interacting with too. It was such a joyful experience.
Oh, that sounds lovely. What a good way to spend Valentine's Day, right?
Yes, it was awesome.
Oh, well, do you have any top advice for folks who are working in an early childhood setting for adaptive music making and what they can do?
I think my biggest advice would be to watch what your students are doing. Use that to guide how you adapt experiences. Use that to guide how much you increase expectations. Like I think about, you know, when we think about that adapted music making, there's no right way. They're all right ways. And so whatever we can do to capture our students and being able to connect through that music and to have that inclusive environment, I think it's so important. So there's no guidebook. Like, just remember that, like, whatever they're doing, that is the way that we want to respond and engage. Like, that for me would be the biggest set of advice.
Last question that I've got for you, just if you have any resources that you recommend or things folks should check out, what comes to mind for you?
So, something that really comes to mind, this is something that our agency is really, really, really focusing on right now. And it's something that we have been spending a lot of time learning about this year in our department, which is the multi-tiered systems of support and how we can provide tiered level supports for all students and how we can support them in ways that are growing skill sets and that we're able to meet the needs of so many students. And so something that we have been spending a lot of time with, I'm just gonna share is the multi-tiered system of supports and evidence-based practices handbook in response to intervention. That has been a big tool for us. The other thing that has been really special is this year, we actually are participating with Lori Denenbell and another professor on inclusive practices for early childhood. And we're getting some really intentional training on that. And that has been wonderful. So that has really been helpful in thinking about how we can support all students in the early childhood classroom. And I just love what's coming from that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all of your experience and insight and expertise.
Just want to thank you, Erin, today for inviting me. This has been so fun. I've been looking forward to it all week. So this has been a real big treat. So thank you for including me in this.
Thank you for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2023.